Welcome to the work session of the Gustavus City Council. We have a full house tonight and on Zoom. It's just pretty amazing. I want to welcome you all and hope that you had happy and healthy holidays. Our business of the work session is generally to review and discuss the draft agenda for the upcoming general meeting. The general meeting usually follows the Monday after the work session. But this month, because City Clerk Liesl Barker will be out of town for training, we've scheduled the general meeting for Tuesday, January 16th at 7 p.m. We're going to start tonight's meeting with an informational presentation by the Nature Conservancy, and we'll be joined by the Nature Conservancy Director, Ivy Sponholz, Julia Nave from Juneau, and Hank Lentfort. A little over a week ago, we learned that Bob Starbird of the Hoonah Indian Association sent a letter in November 2021 to the Nature Conservancy requesting transfer of the Gustavus Four lands to the Hoonah Indian Association, and that this request was followed up by last April with three members of the Nature Conservancy when they traveled to Hoonah to meet with the Hoonah Indian Association. The lands in question contain approximately 2,400 acres, which constitutes 28% of the private lands in Gustavus and are treasured by the community of Gustavus. In 4 days, as of 1 o'clock this afternoon, we had received signed petitions, letters, and email from 218 people. We posted the letters and emails we received on our website. You can follow the links to government and then to council. So I want to express our appreciation for the dedication and hard work that Hank has put into preserving the Gustavus Four lands and thank the community of Gustavus and the Nature Conservancy for working in partnership for over 2 decades to secure the Gustavus Four lands. Before I hand it over, I think probably to Ivy, I wanted to read a few words from an introductory paragraph that Mike and Karen Taylor wrote in there. I can locate it. I think expresses pretty well at least how I feel about how we're going to go forward today and proceed. Mike says, we write to you today to express our great appreciation for the partnership between the Nature Conservancy and the community of Gustavus, Alaska over 2 decades in securing the superb natural biological resources of the Gustavus Four Lands Preserve. 2 decades after we worked with our neighbors to effect the transfer of lands from the Alaska Mental Health Trust to a robust and sustainable conservation status, it is time to rededicate ourselves to the continuing shared vision and partnership with TNC that made it all possible. And thanks to Mike, I surprised him by using the quoting from him. Okay, and just in terms of procedure, we'll be taking questions after our invited guests speak. But because we're still collecting information, like I say, we've had a little over a week about the land issue, we won't entertain comments or discussion tonight. I'll ask council members to raise their hands so I can recognize them, and we'll proceed in order to give everyone a chance. We may be able to ask follow-up questions, and we'll see how much time we have. I'm hoping that we could conclude this in about maybe 30, 45 minutes. We'll see how it goes. And I guess is Ivy Sponholz, the director of the Alaska chapter of the Nature Conservancy. Are you?
I'm right here. Thank you. Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, and we can see you as well. How nice.
Wonderful. All right, now I can see you as well. Nice to see you all. Thanks very much, Mayor and esteemed Gustavus Council members. We very much appreciate the invitation to join you here today. And let me start by introducing myself, and then I'll kind of talk a little bit about the history of kind of how we came to this moment today. And I have Julia Nave, who's our Southeast Program Director, with me to be able to answer more questions about the research that she's done. And of course, Hank, who is the preserve expert and stewards that resource so capably in your community. So I am a lifelong Alaskan who was born in what is now the Wrangell-St. Elias National Park in the very small community of Nabesna. It's even smaller than Gustavus. I have been at the Nature Conservancy for just over a year after serving in the legislature for 7 years. And before that, I worked in the nonprofit sector for a few decades. I am extremely grateful to be here, although I'm very sorry that it's under circumstances that have created so much stress for your community. I apologize for that. At the Nature Conservancy, we understand that the Gustavus Orleans Preserve is deeply cherished in your community, and our relationship to Gustavus and your community is very important to us as well. We are deeply grateful to have been able to partner with the community of Gustavus to create the preserve 2 decades ago. And I want to just start at the very, very beginning and say there will be no changes in ownership of the preserve without an extensive community engagement process. Nothing will take you by surprise. We know that there are some other issues that are taking place right now that make it easy potentially to jump to conclusions, but these circumstances are really unrelated. The one thing I also am very excited about is that the Global Board of the Nature Conservancy is coming to Gustavus in June, and we are very excited to welcome the Global Board to Gustavus with you. The opportunity to share the Nature Conservancy's work in Southeast Alaska, including both in Gustavus and in Hoonah, and to visit Glacier Bay with these global leaders is really cool. You have a really special place in Gustavus, and we're really excited to be able to highlight that and celebrate that with you and the Global Board. At the same time, your community has been evaluating the implications of a proposed formation of a Hoonah borough. And in that context, my understanding is that there's been some concern about HIA taking over the preserve, and that some rumors started circulating. And I could see how there might be some concerns about that. And knowing how important this preserve is to all of you, I want to personally apologize for the distress we've caused by not having clear lines of communication. It certainly was not our intention. As you mentioned, Madam Mayor, in November of 2021, the former HIA tribal administrator, Robert Starbard, wrote to TNC asking us to consider transferring the preserve to HIA. And we've shared a copy of this letter with you all with Hoonah Indian Association's permission. And in it, Starbird explains HIA's interest in owning the preserve and its interest also in upholding the conservation value of the preserve. We've had a very long relationship with Hoonah Indian Association and have partnered with them on a number of very successful conservation initiatives, including the Hoonah Native Forest Partnership, Alaskan Youth Stewards, the Sustainable Southeast Partnership, and the Seacoast Trust. And if you are not familiar with HIA's conservation work, the HIA environmental website, which I understand is a little bit buried in their website as a whole, which we're going to link in the chat, is a really great resource. Actually, it looks like I can't put something in the chat, but it's www.hia-env.org is their environmental website. So that's hia-env.org, and it's worth checking it out. This request underscored an internal need to have a better handle on our land ownership documents and the acquisition history. This preserve that has been so well stewarded by Hank Lentfer over the last 20 years and cared for by the community of Gustavus is so important to us, but there had been some turnover in staffing that meant that those of us that are responsible for some of the decisions associated with the preserve didn't understand all of the nuances of the preserve's original creation. And we decided to do a review of the history of the preserve, how it was created, consolidated, and digitized the acquisition and ownership documents. We worked to understand the legal and other restrictions associated with the lands that make up the preserve, as well as the requirements of our global organization for land transfers and the expressed and documented intent of the donors who helped to fund its creation. This review was completed in April 2023, at which point we presented the relevant parts of our findings to the Hoonah Indian Association. And I think we shared a summary memo of that with the mayor, and I hope that will be shared more broadly. There has been no action of any kind since that point. However, we owe you an apology since we didn't take steps to make the city of Gustavus aware that we were undertaking this review and share it with the council. And you might be wondering why we would consider, any sort of, transfer at all. The TNC was established 70 years ago in the lower 48, and for much of its history, its conservation work was really focused on acquiring and preserving lands across the country. At that time, the Nature Conservancy was the original and the only private conservation land trust in the United States. Now there are thousands of them, but the Nature Conservancy was the first. And we own the responsibility of the legacy of this past approach, which also included acquiring indigenous lands and advancing a model of conservation that reinforced an outdated understanding of the relationship of people and wilderness. That is, that wilderness doesn't include people. And obviously, you understand very well in Gustavus how important wilderness is to people. And historically, the Nature Conservancy often, like many environmental organizations, believe that protection equated to keeping people off the land or strictly limiting their use. And today, we now seek to address this legacy by respecting indigenous worldviews and repairing some of the damages that has been done by the taking of native land. This work is part of our commitment to what is called right relations with indigenous peoples and communities. Additionally, the very nature of our work at the Nature Conservancy is changing. As I mentioned, we started out as a land trust. We're, however, an organization that has evolved multiple times throughout the course of our 70-year history from a land trust to a science-focused organization. And now we are realigning again around our most ambitious conservation goals yet, designed to address the twin crises of climate change and biodiversity loss. This realignment requires that we change our approach again in service of these goals. We call these goals the 2030 goals. And you may recognize that that's related to the UN's, the goals of limiting climate change by 1.5 degrees centigrade by 2030. Today, our organization prefers an approach that's based on working in partnership with communities, tribes, state and federal agencies to positively impact policies and practices to address climate change and biodiversity loss. We aim to support the vision and leadership of local communities near ecologically important lands. We know, and the science bears this out, that people who live near and rely on local lands are usually the best stewards of them. And this is because they're invested in their continued health and in the ways in which they can support nearby communities. So as this organizational approach has shifted, the Nature Conservancy and the Nature Conservancy in Alaska is the same. We've been taking stock of lands that we own around the world and asked ourselves if we are the best long-term owners of the land. While we have completed our initial review and learned a lot through the process of digging into the background of the Gustavus Preserve, we have not had the time to determine what our preferred path forward is for the future of the preserve. Aside from recognizing that if there were to be any change, and that's not determined quite now, but if there were to be any change to ownership or stewardship, there would need to be an extensive engagement process between the community and any future owner. We also recognize that shift in our organizational strategy does not release us from commitments of the past. If we were to transfer the title to another entity, the Nature Conservancy has a pretty comprehensive process that ensures that we honor promises of the past. And one of the most important elements of this process is that the party under consideration to receive lands must share the conservation ethic and uphold the conservation value of the land in perpetuity as the Nature Conservancy would have. Other requirements include that the new owner must have the experience and resources to uphold the conservation value of the land. They must comply with donor and funder commitments, and the transferee would take on obligations and restrictions associated with the funding commitment, and funds associated for stewardship of the property must be transferred to the new owner. We would never eliminate any conservation value associated with transferring ownership of the lands. The fact that they are, that any of these lands or a preserve is a preserve would remain so into the future. So to summarize what I've just said, we understand that the Gustavus Forelands is preserve is deeply cherished in Gustavus, and that our relationship to your community is very, very important to us. We want to assure you that there will be absolutely no changes to the ownership of the preserve without extensive community engagement process. Nothing will take you by surprise moving forward. In fact, the only reason it took you by surprise now was that we actually didn't intend to complete a transfer at this point in time. And we're still kind of getting our ducks in a row to determine how to or whether to reach out to you. And as long as we have a relationship, and as we have a long relationship with the community of Gustavus, we also have a long relationship of with successful conservation initiatives with the Huna Indian Association, which we are also very proud of. And we took on the in-depth review of the history of the preserve, including the legal issues and the commitments made to local donors, because we value our relationships with both HIA and Gustavus. We have an unwavering commitment to lasting conservation. We have a strong commitment to right relations with Indigenous communities and tribes, and have a changing organizational conservation strategy. No decisions have been made about the future of the preserve. Decisions about the preserve will only be made in close consultation with both the community of Gustavus and Huna Indian Association, and in accordance with the letter of the law. Thank you very much for the invitation to address you tonight. And I imagine you all have questions. However, before we go there, I want to clearly state that I am not an expert in the preserve, and I won't pretend to be. In fact, I am keenly aware that you are likely much more knowledgeable about the preserve than I am. To help me with detailed questions, I'm joined by Hank Lentfer, our long-term preserve steward, who you all know well, who really views himself as a champion for and an advocate for Gustavus, along with Julia Nave, the Nature Conservancy's Juneau-based Southeast Program Director, who managed the preserve review process. They can help answer any questions I may not know the answer to. And if we can't answer any of your questions today, tonight, we'll be sure to research the answer and follow up with you at that point and as soon as we're able to. Finally, we know that this discussion with you tonight is not the end of our engagement with the community of Gustavus on this matter, but really just the start of it. So with that, Madam Mayor, are there any questions for us?
Thank you. Thank you for your remarks. And now we'll go to questions from council members. Maybe I'll take the opportunity to be the first one to ask. I'd like to know what the decision process is. I'm under the impression that it's not made by the Alaska chapter. Is it made at the national or global level? Are you given a directive about transferring land, in other words, from another entity?
Oh, that's a great question. No, we've not been given any directives from anybody about what we should or should not do with this. And I think that the process that I described that is a part of our global organization is really designed to make sure that we're exercising good due diligence. It's not a matter of determining or directing what the outcome could or should be. It's really just a matter of making sure that we're considering all of the, ramifications. There are folks within the organization who do preserve stewardship all the time and land transfers, and are much more familiar with the nuances of these sorts of things than we are. And so we have the opportunity really to leverage those resources. The process by which we would explore this would involve, I think, pretty extensive community engagement with both the community of Gustavus and the community of Huna, so that we could make sure that we were working through and addressing everybody's concerns, so that there would be consensus at the end on what an appropriate sort of next step might be. And that might lend itself to not taking any action at this point in time, or it might lend itself to some other new novel solution that we haven't yet considered. But really, I think it's really important to us that we hear from you about what is important to you before we dive into anything. And I want to be really clear, the global board coming to Alaska in June that's not a deadline for us to make a decision about this preserve. These things are unrelated. Really what we want is to be able to make sure that if we are making any decisions about the Gustavus Preserve, that we're doing them really thoughtfully in partnership with those that are most impacted.
Thank you. I guess I'm not entirely sure. Is the decision made by the Alaska chapter?
The decision would be made by the Alaska chapter. And yeah. Okay.
Thank you. Are there council members that want to ask questions in the room? Former Mayor Taylor.
good evening, Ivy. And it's a pleasure to have you join us. And thank you so much for your time, your presentation, and it's good to hear your commitment to working with the Gustavus community. And thank you for sending the packet of information that, although I was around here and involved in the original purchase over two decades ago, there were a lot of details about it that I'd forgotten. And having the document that was titled the Board of Governors Real Estate Project Abstract and Resolution, not only was a nice summary of the values of these lands and a lot of the work done by Gustavus residents, many here with a lot of scientific background, to identify the values of the lands, the biodiversity and so forth, help acquire the funding and a model for securing those lands as the Gustavus Forelands Reserve preserve. The document reminded me that from the very earliest planning for this and at the time of purchase, that there was an intent that the city of Gustavus would become increasingly involved in working with TNC as the city matured and as the preserve itself matured to share aspects of management and help set policy and so forth. There's even the potential that the city could, if the lands were ever needed to be divested by TNC, that the city might indeed be a party to take responsibility for them. So my question is, what do you recommend for the city of Gustavus in the coming weeks to work with TNC to take a new look at some of the intents that were expressed in this document and find ways for us to continue to work together to assure the future of this preserve and make sure it's held in and sustained in the fine condition that it is today for future generations?
Yeah, that's a great question. I really appreciate that. And I think that, we're not going to be, as I said earlier, we're not taking any actions anytime really soon. Like this is not, that's not what's happening. I think what is most important from my perspective right now is that we really work on getting a sense of what is most important to everybody involved. And while the documents that you're referencing were based on that moment in time, now 20 years has passed and the situation is a little bit different than it was then. And the city of Gustavus has really matured, which is really fantastic. That's evidenced by, the sophistication of this group, for example. And I think also the Nature Conservancy's understanding and our commitment to Indigenous right relations with Indigenous communities has also evolved and grown over that time. And I think what I would recommend is rather than thinking about this in terms of weeks, I would start to think of this in terms of months and years. And, to sort of reiterate what I said earlier, we really do not want to be making any decisions about this quickly. And while, we're at the Nature Conservancy in Alaska, we're able to drive this decision. We're also keenly, in many respects, we're also keenly aware that there are many partners in this process, and we could not move forward without a lot more work. What I would like to suggest is that we consider, you know, a series of potentially facilitated meetings, for example, where we could come together with members of Gustavus, members of from HUNA, and with the Nature Conservancy, and sort of sit down and think about the future of the preserve and explore what might be, you know, what everybody's interests are in the preserve, what a vision for that might be, and then start to chart a course together.
Thank you.
Okay. Other members of the council and like to speak? Okay. Jim Muscoviac.
Yeah. Thank you, Ivy, for giving the presentation. We're learning a lot here. I'm looking at your 3-year strategic plan. It says the Nature Conservancy plans to transfer ownership of culturally significant lands to Alaska Native organizations. I'm curious, who initiated this transfer of lands in Gustavus to the HUNA Indian Association? Was that something the Nature Conservancy did, or was this something that originated with the HUNA Indian Association?
So just to reiterate, thank you so much for that question, James. And I think just to reiterate, the most important thing is that nobody initiated any transfer. There is no transfer happening. That's not what is happening right now. The HUNA Indian Association expressed an interest in that transfer, and we did a deep dive to understand the history of the Gustavus Preserve, the legal issues, get the associated documents in a form that was usable for everybody, referenceable for everybody. So now we have a sense of these, of what the history is, what the legal facts are. And we shared a summary of those findings as we shared a summary with the HUNA Indian Association back in April. We shared a summary of those findings as well with the mayor, which I expect will be distributed more broadly today. And I apologize for not sharing that more, you know, earlier. We just happened to have had some staffing transitions along the way that I think led to a little bit of a dropped ball. We had somebody have a baby this summer, and so and a turnover in a key personnel that just meant that a communication ball got dropped there. But we're not transferring any property, we're not selling it, we're not any of those things right now. That's not what's happening.
Thank you. And just to let you know, we did receive the memorandum from Julia about 4:00 and circulated, put it on our website, and also sent it out. So
thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Is there another council member that would like to ask a question? If you would need to raise your hands. Okay, Council Member Patrick.
If I could just stem off a letter that was submitted to the TNC from Lewis Sharman. He had a good question that he really wanted us to go over tonight, which was, what was the TNC's understanding of how the HIA would like to manage the lands? Was that ever discussed when they showed interest?
We haven't had that's a good question. Thank you very much for that. And we haven't explored that because we didn't have an intent to transfer the property. So that discussion hasn't taken place.
And I'm happy to add on to that. Yeah, I'm happy to add on to that. The letter of intent that HIA initially sent in 2021 to TNC spoke a bit about what their intentions were there, and they were, they spoke to alignment with stewarding the lands as TNC has for the past 20 years, and their intention to match that conservation ethic. And so there was language in that letter from HIA at the outset around that, and then in conversations with them, initial conversations with them, when we presented the information back to them, they reiterated that interest, and that really their interest is, I can't speak for HIA at this moment, but that's that's where they were coming from when the letter was drafted and when we've followed up with our review information to them in April. So it's a good question. Thanks.
Okay, and Councilmember Bishop.
Hi, Ivy. You mentioned management in perpetuity if there were a transfer. And the way that we understand it is that the state of Alaska retains development rights. Would that hold true?
I think that we're not prepared to answer questions about what would or would not hold true with a transfer, with a sale of a property that we are not intending to sell right now. Julia might be able to add some more nuance to the background there, but just given, I feel like a lot of these questions are really focused in on what would happen if there were a sale. And because we haven't had a discussion of a sale, we haven't gotten into any level of that level of legal analysis. Julia, do you have anything you want to add?
Yeah, that's true. And there's the initial review that we did uncovered, you know, that there's a conservation easement across those acres and that those easements do travel with the land. And so in order to, any new owner would be responsible for managing the land to the letter of those easements as well. Is my understanding, but that's not something that our legal team has dug into in greater detail, but that's the intent of those easements is to travel with the land regardless of owner on title.
Thank you.
Okay, do any of the council members out in Zoom land wish to ask questions? Brian?
Thanks. Thanks, Ivy and Julia, for being here. And I still don't know if I have my question totally formulated, but I'm stepping a little bit away from the like hard fact and more maybe into kind of the ineffable here. First, I want to thank you for being here and for your candor in presenting all of this, what is obviously a complex situation. And I'm kind of curious to try and pick your brain a little bit about how the Nature Conservancy as an organization approaches a situation like this where you have essentially an indigenous organization laying an ancestral claim to land and balancing that with the needs of the current residents that are kind of occupying and using the land, and how, I guess, spiritually, how your organization approaches this and what your vision is. I kind of verging on the ephemeral here, ineffable. It's hard to pin down exactly what I want to ask. So I hope some of what I'm getting at kind of makes sense there.
I think that's a really great question, Brian. And what you're asking, if I'm understanding correctly, and let me know if I'm not, is sort of what is our philosophy about how it is that we would reconcile kind of the series of, you know, the different stakeholders that have a very strong interest in the property for, you know, a whole variety of very valid reasons. And within the Nature Conservancy, thanks, I'm glad that I encapsulated that well. I think within the Nature Conservancy, we often talk about moving at the speed of moving at the speed of trust, which is why I keep emphasizing tonight, like, we are not transferring the property right now. That is not what is happening right now. What we would like to do is, and you know, in our perfect world, we would have initiated this conversation with you before there was rumors circulating about this. So we could just make sure we were on the front end saying like, hey, somebody's asked us something. And this is what we found when we were investigating. I think what is really important to us is that we would only be moving at the speed of trust, and that we would work to try to reconcile in collaboration with all of the parties. I mean, there are really strong, there are very strong reasons for both the city, community of Gustavus and the community of Huna to want to have some ownership. And I actually think that there's possible third way that isn't like a binary choice between one or the other, but where there could be some collaboration along the way. There's ways of, exploring collaboration between Huna and the community of Gustavus, Julia can sort of dive into some of those nuances. I think she does a very, very good job of this, and maybe I'd like to invite her to sort of step in at this moment and talk a little bit more about that.
Another part of the review that was undertaken that we keep referencing that's in the memo that hopefully you'll all get a chance to look at is it laid out that, you know, TNC Alaska has three choices but there's a lot of it's kind of a sliding scale between transfer title, keep title, and there are a bunch of different ways in between as well where we, you know, can have legal agreements to share, to have, you know, increased cultural use agreements. There could be co-management, co-stewardship. There's a wide variety of agreements that are similar to, you know, that meet in that middle ground someplace that can be utilized and that TNC has experience using in other places where they're, where land ownership is a larger part of their conservation work. And so we would have a lot of learning to do from other models of that have worked in other places, and also a lot of listening to do to the communities that are interested in accessing this land and have been good stewards and want to be good stewards of it. So I think that's where the gray area is. And I think also just to speak philosophically to your question, Brian, because it is a really good question. I feel like if you got 10 TNC people in a room, we could talk for, you know, 10 straight hours about that. But we'd love to, but it is a really interesting question. And it's one that the Nature Conservancy as a global organization has practiced in all around the world, and every context is different, but we have a lot of strong experience to draw from and have had and have a lot of guiding documents that we and kind of strategies that lead our thinking there. And so we have a human rights guide that we uphold. We have free, prior, and informed consent that we align ourselves with under the UN and dealing with Indigenous peoples. And so there's a number of things that we honor and are beholden to as an organization when working with in partnership with Indigenous peoples and local communities. So it's a very complex sort of slice of the conservation world, and you hit it right on target. So yeah, it would be something to unpack together with the communities, I think.
Thank you. I really appreciate your thoughts there.
Thank you. Councilmember Moskoviak, is your hand still up or newly raised?
No, I put it up again. I just have a comment here. You talk about moving at the speed of trust, Ivy, yet it was 2 years ago, or more than 2 years ago, that this was proposed, and we're just learning of it now.
I can't speak to what decisions were undertaken 2 years ago. I've been here about 14 months, but what I can say is that the letter did not initiate a process for us of exploring a transfer. What it did was initiate for us a process to understand the history, the legal issues and considerations around the property. There's been some turnover since the preserve was created. It was 20 years ago. Our chapter was led at that time by David Banks, who is now our global director of conservation at that time. And so there'd been some turnover in that time. And what we realized was we needed to do a deep dive to really understand it. We are also a very small chapter in Alaska. We're small and scrappy, and we needed to bring in some additional staff capacity to help us. And we brought in a fellow who is essentially an internal kind of loaned executive from another chapter, Maria, who did really just a deep dive into all of the legal documents. And she just wrapped up that work just this last spring. And so, you know, it took us a good deal of time even to kind of do the deep dive work and really and really make sure that we understood all of the issues around there. And I still feel like there's probably a lot more that we could learn about this as we understand all of the nuances of this. I can tell you that we do have a very strong commitment to acting with integrity. And it's one of our core values, as is respect for people, communities, and cultures. Those are two of our core organizational values. And when I think about what drives our thinking, we want to make sure that we are, in fact, moving at the speed of trust and do not want to start a conversation that we can't follow up on and follow through on. And we felt like we needed to get our own house in order first before we could come forward. As I mentioned earlier, somebody had a baby this last summer, and that meant we just needed to take a little bit more time before we could circle around with you. And it was our intention to reach out to you this winter or spring, but here we are today, making sure that we responded to your questions. And I'll just tell you, I only learned that there were concerns in the community about this on Thursday, and since then I have worked an extraordinary number of hours, including many hours over the weekend, as has Julia and Hank and others on our team, because we wanted to make sure that we could show up tonight with integrity. We could make amends for not communicating with you earlier and let you know very clearly that we want to start a conversation with you now. And there's one good thing that has come out of this moment is that the conversation has been started and everybody is, you know, here. We've got 58 people on the Zoom, and I understand there's quite a few people there in the room. I can't see all of them as well, but we certainly started a conversation. It's not the way I would have preferred to have started this conversation, but I'll just underscore once again that we will never take any action without really, you know, rich engagement with your community. So that's very, very important to us. Julia, did you want to add anything to that?
No, I don't think so. That's great. Thanks.
And it looks like Councilmember Driscoll has a question.
I'd be interested in hearing a perspective from Hank. I know he's been very involved in this from the beginning, and I would appreciate if I could hear perhaps his perspective on this.
On a particular piece, Janine, is there something in particular you want me to speak to?
Well, I guess, yes, I would appreciate if you gave us some insight in terms of going forward. It sounds like what she said is that there's a priority of the TNC to be able to respect the Indigenous portion of the land management. And so that seems to be what is right now our critical thing, is where do we balance who manages it, whether it's the Nature Conservancy, whether it's the City of Gustavus, whether it's HIA, or whether it's a combination of all of those. And so I'm just curious what your perspective is on that.
I'd say largely confused, Janine. There's just a lot of moving pieces. And part of what I'm reflecting on goes back to Jim's comment too about why it's taken this long. And in hindsight, I mean, I of course now wish that I would have encouraged sharing of that letter as soon as it was sent with everybody. But it just seemed like such a far off and unlikely thing so far in the future that we just approached it really slow, which is the speed of trust, really is slow. I have a lot of questions myself. I am ready for conversations to try and get them answered. They're not questions I can answer by myself. I certainly, one kind of side piece of this is it's a part of me is really tickled to see how passionate the response has been, and that after 20 years since we worked so hard to buy these lands, they are so integral to who we are as a community, and that is the source of the passion. And I think I've been lucky enough to attend all of the weddings that have happened on this property, and I'm lucky enough to have eaten a lot of the moose that are on this property, that have come from this property. So I, there's part of me that's celebrating my community's passion for this land. So that's a piece of it. And of course, I want to see that continue and grow. So I don't know that I even touched your question there, Janine. But those are just some of the thoughts that have been running through me in the last week.
Thank you, Hank. It looks like one of the people in Zoom land sent you a little heart for the response. I think at this point, we would like to wrap up. We've been going for almost 50 minutes, unless anyone, any of the council members has a strong desire to ask another question. I'd like to thank both Ivy and Julia for coming, and also all the materials that they provided us with, which we will be sharing and have shared. Particularly, I'm looking forward to reading Julia's memo. So thank you, and we will be talking with you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, neighbors. It's great to see us find something we can all unite on.
That's the truth.
Well, yes.
Okay. Well, thank you. All right. Well, we'll be moving on to other business. Do we want to take a 5-minute break, or are we ready to proceed? Okay. Thanks, everybody. I don't know who all wants to stay around for the mundane business of government, but we'll move on with it. Oh, and one thing that I wanted to say, if you have any letters or any questions, please be sure and send them to us. We're going to be compiling them and sharing them with TNC. If you have, I'm sorry.
If you would like to share a letter, if you could send it to clerk@gustavus-ak.gov, and I will make sure it gets to the rest of the council and our mayor and city administrator. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go give folks just a minute to clear out.
Madam Mayor, I just wanted to thank you for putting this on the agenda, and I appreciate your leadership in giving the public here this opportunity to make evident how important this is, and for us to hear and learn more from TNC. So thank you very much.
I had a good mentor. Okay, so now I guess we will. Am I going to need my gavel? Okay, let's see what we start going down.
All right, if we could have come to order, please, so we can proceed with this meeting, I would greatly appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. We're going to be going over the agenda, and we've got a pretty big agenda tonight. I'm hoping, although some of them we can probably pass through pretty quickly. It's been a pretty hectic week, and so we don't have copies of all of the materials, but they will be posted before too much longer. So the first is the general meeting minutes. I don't know if anyone has any comments now or any requests for changes at this time. Okay, seeing none. And the committee staff reports. Thanks to Fire Chief Soule for turning up the volume on the Zoom. We appreciate that. Would you like to come forward and give your quarterly report today, or had you planned on providing it during the next? It'll be week after next.
Week?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Next.
It'll be on Tuesday.
Tuesday the 16th, not next week. The week after. Have I got it wrong?
No, you got it right.
Oh, right. Thank you. I am indeed.
It's winter, you know.
It's
a little mixed up here.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll do that on. I don't know if the EMS coordinator wants to give her report now or wait until the next meeting as well. Okay. How about Madam Clerk? Madam Clerk.
I'm going to wait till the next meeting. Typically, we do wait until the general meeting to give those reports.
Okay. And seeing as how we don't have the Marine Facilities Coordinator, I guess we will wait on that. And the consent agenda will be the certificate of records destruction. Is that anything that you wanted to describe now?
It's in the updated packet. I don't know if Kyle, you can put that up. All right. It's just some old EMS records, some old DRC records, and some old election records that are all have met their time and can now be destroyed. I have a few other things to add on there before we make the posting for the general meeting packet.
Okay, thank you. And item number six is the will be under new business Glensitch cleaning and culvert replacement project. Councilmember Taylor, would you like to speak?
Sure. We've got on here now is the first step in doing a project like this, and that is for the council to approve the scoping document that lays out what it is that we want to do and essentially authorizes the project manager to proceed with developing the project. It does not fund it. And this project that we're proposing is part of our long process of improving drainage in the central part of Gustavus, particularly for Wilson Road and for floods that come down Wilson Road when we have overflow into the gravel pits. And we have, probably most of you are aware that we've done a lot of work up at the pits to direct those overflows into the east side airport ditch. And the Jeff Jarvis of DOT did a wonderful job to clean that ditch down as far as the southeast end of the runway. So that can carry a lot of the flow, but we can't always be sure that it will manage to carry it all, particularly because the large culvert under the bend of Wilson Road where it becomes Rink Creek Road is undersized. So there always is the potential for that east side airport ditch to be unable to carry all of the flow of a large event like we had in December of 2020. So we've been in assuming that we could have another event in the future like that one that is more than the east side airport ditch, even though it has been improved and clean, could handle. And so we may still get floods down Wilson Road, and we have been improving ditching along that. You remember we did the large deep ditch from Hemlock down to Faraway provide a route to take water off of Wilson Road so it doesn't go through the subdivisions on the west side of Wilson Road like it did in 2020. But that for that to be fully effective, we need to be assured that the water can continue on down through Glenn's Ditch. And Jeff Jarvis has again cleaned most of that pathway from Wilson Road to where the ditch wraps around the edge of the runway and behind Glacier Bay Construction's property, and then crosses Gustavus Road and becomes what we know more commonly as Glenn's Ditch at Glenn's Ditch Road, and then proceeds on out past the Nature Conservancy's, or through the Nature Conservancy's, the edge of it there lands to Tidewater. But that ditch, which had, which for many years was a DOT or drainage easement, has become very overgrown with vegetation. And we have a couple of culverts along there, one under the section line by Kimber's place, and then another one down at Mossy's driveway that are undersized and somewhat failing. And then there's a third one down farther that serves no existing residents. So the combination of vegetation in the ditch and those undersized culverts means that we can't be confident that the ditch will carry the water that could be dumped into it effectively. And in fact, in December 2020, there was flooding in that area because of the backed up nature of the ditch. So so we are scoping a project to clean the ditch and replace two of the three culverts and pull the third, which serves no residents at this time, and replace those culverts with probably with bridges so that there will never again become a barrier that restricts flow down the ditch. Even with isostatic rebound, they won't perch or that sort of thing. We'll have a continually flowing ditch. So it's unfortunate that DOT has now views their previous drainage easement along that route as having expired. We tried to persuade them to clean that section of the ditch, and their response was that they no longer felt it was their responsibility and that the city would have to take responsibility for it. We can't force them to clean that ditch, of course, and so we know that we need to clean it, and so we've developed this project to do so. We have only a vague idea what the cost is. We're estimating about $100,000 because replacing those culverts with bridges, even simple bridges like flat rack bridges, can be fairly expensive. So so we're estimating it, though, at $100,000 with the idea that we would seek funding from various grant sources to help us fund this project. And we're the mayor is now recommending that we add this to our CIP request with the state, with the possibility that the state legislature would see that they indeed have some responsibility for this ditch, even if their easement has expired in their view. And maybe the legislature would be kind enough to give us some funding so that we don't have to cough up the full amount out of the city's funds. So this approval of this just gets the project going, and it gives us a basis for seeking grant funding to eventually construct the improvements.
Thank you for that. We, new members, once a year, we'll review our CIP, our capital improvement project list and plan, and add or reshuffle projects. And our purpose in doing this sort of out of order of that process is that we have an annual opportunity to request funding from the Alaska legislature, which is called CAPSIS. So that is our purpose for bringing this forward, to request approval to add it to our plan. And then the there'll be the next item, number 7, will be the resolution submitting the capital projects list to the legislature. We have, and I don't know whether I have that in front of me or not, in the past years sort of made sort of three requests the fire department truck and skid unit disposal and recycling center main building replacement gravel extraction improvement project. And then there'll be, we're adding this fourth Glen's Ditch design, cleaning and bridge installation. We'll take this up at the next meeting and decide whether we want to send all four forward and if we want to reorder the priorities. So that's the purpose for bringing this forward.
I've got a question on this that comes to mind. Did you want to, like, when we move to approve this plan, should we have a sort of a double motion that also includes the direction to the treasurer to add that to our capital improvement plan? In other words, that could be part of the same motion. You were thinking you wanted to have the council to make the official addition to the capital improvement plan of this project because we did not put it in the plan previously.
Right. Yes, to add it to our CIP plan so that we can go forward and send the request to the legislature.
Right. So we would have kind of a double motion. I could work with you on that to include both the approval mm-hmm. of the scoping document and the addition to the capital improvement plan. Okay.
All right. Sounds like a good plan. Okay. And then let's see if the treasurer, Treasurer Sadler, could come and talk to us about the next two items, and items number 8 and 9. Okay, number 8 is certifying the annual certified financial statement of revenues and authorized expenditures for the year ending June
30th, 2024. So, every year, we either have to perform an audit or we have to certify a financial statement. This year, although we are required to do an audit or have an audit done because of the amount of state and federal funds that we received last year, the mayor has asked me to still provide the city with a financial statement that they can certify at the next meeting so that we can use that going forward for grant requests or other things from the state while we wait for the audit to be finalized and that report be sent to us. So I will be preparing a financial statement for the council to certify at the general meeting.
Okay, thank you. And number 9 is the surplus transfer to AMLIP Capital Project long-term
projects. Mm-hmm. Okay, so in order to stay inside the unrestricted funds percentage between 17 and 35% of the FY24 budget, we need to move $200,000 in surplus funds from our checking account into the AMLIP accounts where they will get us more interest than they would if they just sat in our checking account. So that's what that is.
Thank you. Does the city administrator want to comment?
No, I just, when you get a minute, I just wanted to, I was going to give a two-thing report earlier, but we missed that. So I just wanted to mention a couple of things if I could.
I don't actually, I don't see you on the agenda.
No, so. I know. I just wanted to, well, you asked if I was going to do the septic update, and I'm not really going to do a full-fledged one now. I will do it at the meeting, but we did have a banner year for our first year on removing septic from over 70 households. So it came out much better than we thought. And I will report out more numbers on that. But the one other thing I wanted to say, because so many people are here, is one of the things I've been trying to do because of the borough petition is to solicit input from various groups or user groups or business groups that would hopefully scrutinize the borough petition as much as they have the Nature Conservancy lands and have a look at what those impacts might be to the people, the businesses, their operations, all of those things, because we can't figure it all out alone. So, and you know, it's a big undertaking. And so ask people. I've reached out to Jim Kearns and Forrest Braden and asked them to ask the charter fishermen how that's going to impact them. I've reached out to various folks. So in your conversations about that stuff, I'm asking to get input from people and have people look at that and to let us know what they think the impacts might be to their businesses. So I just wanted to put that out there. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Okay. And the next item is the EMS coordinator position. And I'll speak to this for a minute. The temporary 3-month position of EMS coordinator is about to end, and we propose to continue it as a full-time position with a flexible 20-hour work week. The position was created due to a need to support the fire chief and help him focus on the fire side and as well as augment the EMS division. Position has been very successful. The fire hall has undergone transformation, and with Lee Oaken in the position, has organized the EMS supplies and equipment and developed an inventory of medical supplies. The dedicated EMS training has also been very successful with a good number of volunteers and new recruits attending. The position has created links with Glacier Bay Park staff who attend the trainings and have agreed to respond to calls if necessity arises. It has improved the readiness and skills of EMS providers. Another benefit of the position in the past 3 months has been the inclusion of the dispatchers in the training. Although the community is as cautious, always has been, about adding new position, I think this is an important one. The population of the Gustavus has increased dramatically. Between census years 2010 and 2020, the population increased by 48%, and Gustavus has been described as one of the fastest growing communities in Alaska. In addition, the National Fire Protection Association reports a substantial increase in EMS calls nationwide, with 95% EMS and 5% fire calls. This is reflected in Gustavus, which in 2023 had 50 EMS calls and 2 fire calls with a 96-4% ratio. And the cruise ship transfer calls may not have been included in the data. The benefits of a dedicated EMS coordinator is reflected in the data analysis of call types and frequency and focused training on protocols in the most common events. We've been looking through the HUNA documents for about a week or so, and I noticed that they also reflect the national increase in focus on the EMS side of the hall. With a population of around 950, they have a part-time fire chief and 1 full-time and 1 part-time EMT positions. On the dispatch side, which includes police, they have a full-time administrative assistant, 5 full-time dispatchers, and several part-time dispatchers. I'm hoping that we can continue to support and protect our community with the inclusion of this position. Are there other council members that would like to address the issue? Does anyone want to address the continuation of this position? No hands? Okay, Councilmember Taylor.
Well, I'll just say, I've been really pleased for the reports that I've been hearing from the fire hall. I congratulate the chief and our EMS coordinator for making tremendous progress in the fire hall. And so I intend to continue to support this addition as a permanent position. Thanks. Well, a regular position, as we call it.
And does any other council members want to speak to this, the folks that are in Zoom land?
I'd like to ask a question if I could. I apologize.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is this council or vice mayor?
This is Brian Taylor.
Okay.
I apologize if this is in the packet. I didn't get a chance to scroll through that as it was going by, but do we have, you mentioned, you know, our financial concerns on this. And obviously I should preface this by saying that I support this position and I am obviously interested in seeing this go forward, but I am curious at what the dollar amount on this becoming a full-time position ends up setting us. I shouldn't even say setting us back on, but what that ends up adding to the line item for payroll in the budget.
Okay, and the treasurer has joined us.
So Brian, you said full-time, it won't be full-time. It'll be a 20-hour week position, but as a regular employee for the city of Gustavus, at $26 an hour, the position will cost $1,619, $16,919.13. And that's with workman's comp, 7% into the retirement, a health stipend, and payroll taxes at $28 an hour, which I believe is the high end on the job description. It would cost $18,038.97, including workers' comp, 7% to the retirement plan and the health stipend and payroll taxes.
Awesome. I think that is more than reasonable for the added value that we'll get to the community. I think that's an excellent use of funds. Just wanted to hear the numbers, so appreciate that.
Could I confirm it? That's for the remainder of this fiscal year. Am I correct?
That's correct. I guess I should have said that. That's for the remainder of the fiscal year. So that's from January 15th when the funding runs out until June 30th. Then we would budget for the position in FY25, and that process will start here in February.
And could you address the item number 11 is the NCO EMS coordinator position that will be on the agenda for next week?
Until the council gives me direction on how much we're paying the new employee, I can't create an NCO without a dollar amount. So mm-hmm. I could create an NCO for the high amount and assume that we weren't going to pay more than that, or we can wait until the council has decided on an amount and then we can create the NCO. But either way, the city has plenty of money in the bank to pay for this position while the NCO goes forward.
So is there any reason why it couldn't wait until the position has been posted and the applicant hired?
You know, I would have to go and look at the ordinance or ask someone with more experience in this matter. Can we fund a position before the council before the NCO has been adopted?
Madam Mayor.
I don't see why not.
Yeah, of course it takes two meetings to approve an NCO. Mm-hmm. And all the NCO does is boost our budget for this fiscal year sufficiently to cover the position. And any funds that we don't end up using from that, say we over budgeted, are simply returned, returned to our savings at the end of the year. So I think we know that unless for some reason we chose not to approve the position, it makes sense to go ahead and pass an NCO to fund it at, say, even at the upper end of the range, so that we know that we have enough funding to complete the year with it. And then we use whatever we need.
And then Councilmember Patrick.
I just want to state that I am full support of the position and admire what the EMS and fire department does as a whole. I just also have to play devil's advocate and point out that we are adding a position that takes over a bulk of our fire chief's contracted duties. And I just want to maybe address that elephant in the room because I feel like it hasn't been talked about. And I really am interested in hearing Sol's opinion on this. If we can do that now, we can do that later, we can do that privately, whatever.
Okay, and go ahead.
One of the things that happened a few months ago was, before the transition when Mike was mayor, is because of all of disasters going on, we wanted to move some of the work of planning and preparing and adding some of that onto his workload and have the EMS then be handled by somebody else to take some of that load off because of having to prepare for disasters and so on and tsunamis and fires and all of that stuff. We are looking at doing more work in that disaster relief area. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Okay. And I just, in the future, the fire chief's job description and contract would outline those changes, correct?
I would imagine so. We have a list of accomplishments that we've asked to be achieved over the next 6 or 8 months, a phase one and a phase two, and we could share that with you if you'd like.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe I'd add something to that too. That, you know, the consideration of the model here actually has been in some flux, and there's been consideration of it going back to when Travis was chief. And I know Travis was wishing that he could spend more time on hazard mitigation, on emergency planning, and some of those things. But he was consumed by the total load of the department, including a lot of EMS calls and so forth. And I think there is more than enough work to keep our chief busy with overall management of the department, expanding his role to cover more disaster preparation and disaster management, preparing us better for things like forest fires and so forth that could occur with climate change. So I hope that we will be soon moving to expand his responsibilities in those areas. And I believe that our chief will be very well qualified to do those things.
And once again, I want to communicate my support and admiration for both EMS and the fire hall and disaster preparedness and all that. I just want to make sure that is communicated throughout everybody that he will be taking on more without the EMS side of things being his sole focus. I just want to make sure that's communicated and everybody knows out in Zoom land and everything. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody online want to speak up? Okay, I don't see any hands.
I'll jump back in here quickly just to echo some of what Rachel had said and say I think that it's definitely a fair consideration to, as we're, I won't say dramatically, but as we're altering the role of the fire chief to make sure that the job description that we have for that is commensurate with what we're actually expecting to occur in the role. So full support on all fronts here.
Okay, thank you. And then moving on, we've got council reports. The first one is the bike path update with the SS4A grant. Councilmember Moskowiak, could you tell us the results, the outcome of this grant request? Silence. Okay, maybe we can.
I'm here now. I'm sorry. Well, it's just been an exercise in frustration. I mean, we submitted the grant. They said, well, did something wrong here. And we went back to we submitted the grant with the consultants looking over our shoulder. And they said, we did something wrong here. So the consultants looked over our shoulder and we resubmitted the grant and everything was good. And then we got denied. Then the consultants said, well, we probably should have let this out. And, you know, I've been submitting grants for pedestrian bicycle ways for more than 10 years now and have gotten nowhere. And I guess that's my message.
Okay, thank you. And item 13 is a beach wheelchair update. Councilmember Driscoll, is there anything new to report from last month?
So yes, a few things. One is that the beach wheelchair did get returned to sale because it wasn't going to meet our needs. I had a little conversation with them and I think I'd like to follow up with a conversation more with the Juno group to be able to find out more information about these chairs, particularly with ORCA. And so I have a reference of someone to talk with and I'll be following up on that. I did get lots of feedback from places that have used the debug chair. And in general, the reports coming back were very, very high and glowing. There was one question about one of the tire and the amount of air to be put into it to make it useful for both the sand as well as a hardened trail. And so I looked into another beach wheelchair company. And so I'm in the process of getting some quotes from them as well. And so, but I do want to say that in terms of the debug one, there was a something I found that gave a list of the top 10 wheelchairs, and that was number one. So I know that Mike took a look at the beach and the meadow area with the eye of how would it, what would, whether a chair would be able to actually be used on those areas. And so I don't know if Mike wants to summarize what he found, but I also want to say that I think that I'd like to continue doing more research and then put this on hold until I get back to Gustavus and then carry on with it more in the spring, trying to get getting more input from the community as well.
Well, I don't have too much to add to that. You may recall that I did take the chair that we had donated to us from sale in Juneau down on the beach, and my wife Karen sat in it, and I was able to push her around on the sand despite the mechanical issues with that particular chair. It had some missing parts and so forth, but it does work. It does roll on the sand, and as I understand, that model is no longer made, and the ones that Janine's looking at are probably much better. And so I'm fairly confident that they'll work as designed. We certainly see advertising depictions on the web of the of various models rolling around on beaches and places like Florida and so forth, where they're quite popular. So so I think it's probably still worth looking into, and I'm glad Janine is.
And since you have your mic on, want to talk about the Salmon River Playground update?
Certainly. Chuck Schroth, our contractor, has completed the installation of the equipment that we bought from Exerplay. And I encourage anybody who hasn't stopped by to look at it, take a look at it, do so. I'm hearing reports of, even though the weather has been pretty crummy for playing outside in the park, but I am hearing reports that some families have gone by and the kids have been enjoying the equipment. And already we are planning a grand opening with the school kids who proposed this project to us about a year ago now, or just over a year ago, I believe January 20, am I correct? And so we're going to have a little bit of a ribbon cutting ceremony and celebrate the promotion of the project by the school kids of Gustavus.
Yeah, it'll be on the 20th from 11 to 12 with the ribbon cutting at 11:30.
Okay, that brings us to the town hall meeting update, Rachel and Kyle.
Yeah, so a little while ago, Rachel and I started scheming. One thing both of us are passionate about are community involvement and making sure everybody has a voice and is heard. And these meetings aren't exactly the best forum for that. And so we started to put our heads together and get creative on how we can do that in a sort of a different town hall format. And so one thing we want to talk about now is our rough idea, see if that's crazy, see if we have support, see if there's any input, and we'll go from there. So far the idea that's come up is to have it be kind of a low-key, informal thing hosted by two council members. And the idea is that it would continue. So it's not just a one-off thing. It's not about any particular topic. We would dive into topics as necessary, or whatever people want to talk about, what they want to hear or what they want to see from us, how we could get involvement and things of that nature. So we're talking about coffee with council at Fireweed. So anyone can drop by whenever they want from 10:30 to 12 on a Saturday. That can be the starting point. We can kind of let that evolve as time goes. If that doesn't work, we're hoping to kind of catch people on their Saturday errands and do that kind of thing. We'll have some prompt questions, a little intro, and then, you know, hear from people individually. But then towards the end, we hope to kind of scatter it out a little bit and maybe have some one-on-one conversation as things wrap up. We were thinking the first hour or so would be, you know, us introing, talking, asking questions, people then peppering us with questions, peppering us with thoughts, us jotting notes down profusely and reporting back to the council. And then whenever that sort of starts to wind down or sort of taper off, then we can focus on a little bit more one-on-one conversation for anybody's that's not comfortable speaking in public, or we just want to make sure that the seemingly obvious or crazy idea that, you know, might not get told to us in a meeting like this or a general meeting is heard, and we can bring that forward to the council.
So I guess I have some questions. Is this every Saturday?
No. So we're thinking quarterly, roughly, depending on, you know, who's around. Maybe there's some pressing topics and we feel the need. We don't want to make it too rigid or make it a burden on any council members. Mm-hmm. So we're feeling motivated to do this now. I'm on council for the rest of the year. The idea is that we sort of rotate through council members that do it, and we can hopefully start a tradition of doing this quarterly, which would be really cool. Rachel and I hosting the first one, and then see who steps up and wants to be involved, can communicate with one of us, and we can shift that, but quarterly, roughly, to start is the idea.
I think it's a terrific idea. Sounds like it's a lot of fun, too. I think you guys are to be commended for coming forward with it. Do you have a hand up? Okay, Janine.
Yes, thank you. I'm just curious about, and I'd like to open some discussion in terms of the venue. And I am not, I'd like to propose perhaps instead of having it be at a business, particularly one that has a, maybe doesn't necessarily represent the entire community, to have it in to see if we could instead have it at the community center or at the city hall, something that was more of a neutral environment. And so the city council has, you know, given a lot of money in terms of grants, et cetera, to the community center. The idea of the community center is to have a place for the community to get together. And I would suggest that we consider holding it there.
I guess I would disagree. I think I like the greater intimacy of the fireweed and the fact that they're people with differing ideas. I think all the more reason for us to engage with them and talk with them and find out what they're thinking. Go ahead.
Then perhaps we could do it at the library instead or at City Hall.
So Janine, I hear what you're saying. And one of the things that we wanted to be not so rigid about is the venue for each session. So with this starting one, Rachel and I, as the hosts of this event, are agreeing that we would like to do it at the Fireweed. So for future events, if any other council members have a better venue in mind, they can certainly suggest that and we can roll with that moving forward for that particular event. So the idea that, you know, say later on down the road, you and I hosted an event at the library, that would be totally fine. But for this event, Rachel and I are coming to the idea that we'd like to do it at Fireweed.
So do any other council members have any input on that?
Yes, as Kyle just stated, we're hoping to open this up as a volunteer thing for the council members, and whichever two can then also pick a venue. But I want to keep them, I want to just reiterate that we should support our local small businesses. I think that's a fabulous idea. Kelly was on board. She's excited to staff another worker for the event. And we didn't do it at the city hall for this first one because people can be intimidated. This is not a welcoming, warm environment for everybody. The fireweed can be, and I think it's a centralized business location that people are frequently in and can stop in at their own free will and feel comfortable doing so.
Yeah, Brian.
Yeah, I put my hand up and then Kyle mostly put out my sentiment. I think it makes sense to not be too rigid in where we consider hosting something like this. I think it also makes a lot of sense to meet people where they are and to acknowledge openly that there is a little bit of a segmentation in our population and that some people congregate at the Fireweed and that we're not going to catch everybody at the community center. So I see no reason to mandate that this always happen in one place, and it even seems more than reasonable to move it around so that we can try and make sure we're conversing with everybody if that's the point of this kind of an event. So yeah, I fully support having it at the Fireweed, having it at the library, having it at the community center, having it at the beach, maybe if it's nice, although that might be harder to plan in advance. It does seem to make sense to have the council members that are running it maybe pick the location, although I guess we could maybe get into some kind of rotation. It's hard to lay out the things too specifically until we've started trying with it. I was going to jokingly ask if the city would buy me a latte if I do it at the Fireweed, because if that's the case, I'm on board, but that's just a joke.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes,
I would just note that back when Paul Berry was mayor many years ago, he used to have coffee with the mayor, I think, once a week at the Fireweed, and he had people come to chat with him. So I hope people are interested in it wherever we hold it.
Yeah, I think Bill Uncle did the same thing. Hmm. All righty, I think we wrapped that one up.
Jim has a question.
I'm sorry, who?
Jim.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Jim.
Oh, I just wanted to say that Jesse Keel, that's where he held his Meet Jesse Keel events there at the Fireweed.
Last thing before we move on. Mm-hmm. So as far as advertising, we just want to bounce the idea off you before, make sure there's no opposition to that. Pretty simple. Coffee with council with a subheading of we want to hear from you, throwing out a couple of points, bullet points of some prompt questions, and keep it pretty simple. Hosted by the two of us this time, and then yeah, whatever topics are come up, those can evolve, but real simple flyer, when, where, what the idea is. And the idea is that we want to gather information. We don't want to sit up there and do a lot of talking. We want to give some prompt questions and receive information.
Okay, let's see. And this pretty much is the mayor's report, which I don't have a written report. I guess I can give my report with other folks next week. The Nature Conservancy potential land transfers, we talked about that tonight. We didn't have an action item. One of the things that I was considering with upon good advice is that in the Board of Governors Real Estate Project abstract and resolution, which the Nature Conservancy provided us with in 2004, it's the sort of the prospectus for the project, on page 5 in the Community and Watershed Planning and Management, it talks about the potential for transferring title to some or all of its lands to the city subject to a conservation easement. I would like to go ahead and write them and tell them that we're interested in that and that we're reviewing other options, but we want to express an interest in that. I can wait until next week and see if we want to pass a motion sort of authorizing me to make a more definitive letter, or I can go ahead and say, this sounds like something we would want to talk with you about. Are you all okay with that?
Mm-hmm. I'm certainly okay with it. I trust you to represent us well mm-hmm. in that communication. And in kind of follow up on the question that I asked Ivy, I would like to encourage them to maybe have at least a meeting with us to talk about whether we should have, you know, how the city could be more involved in supporting the Gustavus Four Lands Preserve programs and its offer. In other words, should we be working with them on there have been some trail proposals on those properties. Do we need an MOU? Is it worth having an MOU as was suggested in their original abstract and resolution? So, and I don't think that it should be something where we bring in the HIA. I think it should assume that there will not be a transfer. And we don't need to bring in HIA for that sort of thing. We should assume it's going to remain here, owned by TNC, and that the city, as originally intended, will partner with them at an increasing level to forward the vision of the preserve.
And maybe this might be to Kathy and Kemper, who's sitting in the room today. When do we get could we see a tally of the total of the signed petitions? She had, okay. It's ongoing, okay.
Yeah, I think we had 9 letters, all of which have been posted. Mm-hmm. I found them very valuable, particularly the PhD scientist, the glaciologist from Colorado. Yeah, it was really very, very well written. Yeah, I would love to get copies for our files. I don't, if people don't want them to be, posted on the website, we could certainly do that. But, and any questions that we want to ask them, that's also true of the borough formation process. We are just welcoming comment. Yes, ma'am. Okay, thank you. Well, let's let Jim go ahead.
Did you say Jim go ahead?
Yes, please.
Okay, I just want to add something. Ivy was said numerous times that there was nothing really planned about a transfer. However, they got this letter and they did what she said was an in-depth review of the proposal and its history. And then they went to Huna to present it to the Huna Indian Association. They spent a lot of money on this for something that was just an idea. So I'm kind of skeptical about their moving at the speed of trust here.
The one person that they mentioned, Maria, came out from Minnesota for that meeting.
I mean, that's spending big money. Mm-hmm. And they didn't have they couldn't make a phone call to Gustavus or send us a letter or invite us to the meeting. Mm-hmm.
Madam Mayor, it may also be the case that HIA is not as invested in this idea as many of us have feared. Of course, now we don't know for sure, but this was the brainchild of Bob Starboard, along with his purchase of the Gustavus Inn, for which he had grand plans. And of course, he is no longer in that position. And I think I'm guessing it may have something to do particularly with the purchase of the inn and the issues, the problems they've had with that. So it could be that this is not that high on their agenda, but we certainly need to proceed to position ourselves to take the lead in our relationship with TNC and overseeing or assuring the future of the preserve.
And I will give Kathy credit for the suggestion we had on a walk today about forming a lands committee, land management committee, just for management of all of the city lands. And that might be a possibility if we were to take title of the lands. We'll need to start looking at the deeds and find out, what the restrictions are with DNR. And, there's a lot of work to be done. We've done an awful lot in the last week and a half, I can tell you. And you folks, too, thank you very much for everything that you've done.
Certainly raised our awareness. Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, can you talk to the mic, please?
Oh, can you come up? We need to take it
seriously.
On the base, yeah.
Kimber. I think we need to take it seriously. I think they're taking it very seriously. I personally got a, and my business got a huge lashback from HIA today to many tens of thousands of dollars. So they're taking it seriously. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking it seriously. They canceled the trips for this year that they've had booked for a while. So
because of this, something related to this. Oh.
Yeah. They're taking it seriously.
We have to remember that they've had 2 years to plan and think about this, and we've had a couple of days. So yeah.
And if I can add, remember that in their strategic plan, they talked about returning lands to natives. And you know, I don't really trust the Nature Conservancy, and this may have originated in the conservancy saying, "Hey, Huna, maybe we can give you some lands here, and maybe we'll help you write a letter."
Okay. And Brian, did you have something you wanted to say?
Yeah. Again, kind of hard to find exactly what might be the middle road here, but I'm curious on a couple different points. First, I think that there's probably some value, if it makes sense in our organizational structure or otherwise, to form some kind of lands committee or lands trust for us to have, you know, any kind of organization here locally that could help steward these. That seems to make sense and something I hadn't considered prior to this. I mean, I'm also wondering, would we be completely out of line to be neighborly and try and just open direct communication with Huna? I know that at times, especially with the formation of the borough, things have tended towards adversarial. Does that seem entirely unreasonable to anybody? Because it doesn't seem terribly unreasonable to me, though I will openly acknowledge not having the historical perspective that many of you in the room do.
I think we just need to figure out the HIA's clear intent and purposes of doing this. And it just seems that this information has landed in our lap the same time as the borough is being formed. So it's very tense. And there's not clear communication from them directly to us to understand exactly what they want out of this, all of it. The Glacier Bay National Park, all of it. What are they trying to exactly do? And how does that going to affect us living here currently? But we have not heard any of that from them. So maybe we should ask them directly, but you could also just be opening a can of worms, because like I said, they have 2 years of a prepared answer, and we just don't know what we're gonna walk into.
Okay. All right. Oh, go ahead, Kathy.
Well, I didn't put a letter forward because I guess of my position here, although I did send my thoughts to some people. And I had looked up to see, like I said, if their overarching mission was divesting of lands to tribes or indigenous people, and it was. And so then I drilled down to the Alaska region, and on their annual report, it talks about these community forest partnerships, but it also talks about how they're bringing all these people together, including municipalities, to manage these parcels, connected parcels of land. Well, this isn't connected, with a patchwork of owners, and that they would reflect shared goals. And it's like, well, no partnering's been done, no sharing of goals has been done. And I find it interesting that on the heels of the borough petition, where they've carved all of these cities out, us, Pelican, Tanaki, and they therefore wouldn't have access to Gustavus lands, that this is being included at this time so that there would be. And, you know, in my mind, it's a kind of a grab to, you know, provide more activities for their tourship operations. So I think we do need to be really careful, and I need, you know, we do need to, I mean, hopefully the Nature Conservancy, based on what they said, that would not be used in that way. But again, who knows what that might turn out to be. So I do think we have to be really cautious, and I think that it's tied together. That's my feeling on it.
Okay. And speaking of the formation, borough formation petition, the deadline for public comment is February 29th. Between now and then, the Local Boundary Commission fellow who's going to be in Hoonah tomorrow for a meeting, he makes a presentation and will answer questions but not take comments. And it's basically about the process. They posted their the Zoom instructions, so that we found out just today, I guess, that that it was going to be Zoomed. So he'll be doing the same thing for us. He's going to be physically present in Hoonah, but won't be able to make it over here. So, but we'll make an appointment with him and have a public meeting for people to come and listen and ask questions. And the more questions we have, he expressed a real interest in learning about the community, learning more about us. So we have an educational process with him. And then we will want to, it's going to be a little close in February, but we'll be having an action item at our February meeting. We're going to need to decide what our position is and how we want to present our concerns. So it'll be a busy month working on this particular issue. Is there anything else that anybody wants to bring up? Yes, ma'am.
One of the last items on the agenda, after we got through that draft agenda of the general meeting, is we need to look at the February dates. As the mayor had mentioned earlier, that our general meeting this month is moved to Tuesday, and that is because of a holiday. Next month, our work session is on the 5th as scheduled. But I am going to be away in training in Anchorage during that time that our general meeting would normally take place. So we were hoping to get some information from you as the council members on what day you would prefer. We're looking at moving it to either Monday, the 19th. Just please note that that is President's Day. So we weren't sure what people's off days were. We did check with the staff here. Everybody was willing to come in if that works best for the majority of the council. Or we can move it to Tuesday, the 20th. We really don't want to push any further than that, especially due to the Hoonah Borough and needing to take a position and write up some documents and pass those.
I don't think we have a preference one way or another. Sounds like, thank you. Janine, go ahead.
Well, I had my hand up for something else, but I do have a thought on that, is that we do have sort of a precedent that we don't do the meetings on holidays. And so if that is a holiday, perhaps it was best to be consistent to move it to the Tuesday, the 20th. It's just one thought.
Is that a holiday for the city? Do we want to hold it on the 20th?
Okay, so does that mean that the work session will be the week before, or we're going to have 2 weeks in between the work session and the meeting?
When we had spoken earlier, there would be 2 weeks before, or that whole week in between, due to me not being in town to help run the work session or the general meeting.
Okay.
So the work session is when then?
February 5th.
That does mean that we could have a lot of developments during the 2 weeks before the general meeting that wouldn't have been discussed at work session. So it can deal with that.
We could have a special meeting if we needed to in between.
Well, a special work session.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm not going to be able to be at either the 5th or the 20th. I'm leaving town. I'm going to Anchorage the week of the 5th, and then I'll be in California for 2 weeks over the 20th. But if we did do a work session, you're gone the week.
The 12th through the 16th.
Never mind. I'm not going to make any of it.
Okay, but since the work session doesn't require motions and all of that, I mean, could we not manage it ourselves or not?
If you can get somebody to run Zoom, that's fine. You can do it from the cart. Just know that my computer will be with me so that I can continue working and replying to emails and such while I'm at training.
I can run the meeting as far as Zoom and making sure that everybody stays in order or whatever. I agree with what Janine said. The reason why that it's not just that it's a city holiday, it's that the park service is also off. I don't know how many park service employees we have on the council anymore, but in prior times, park service employees have said, hey, you know what? I don't want to come in on my day off for a work session or a city council meeting. And so that is the precedent. So whether we do it on Monday or Tuesday, I don't know why the week matters, but I would prefer if we did it on Tuesday just to stick with precedent. But I can run the meeting while Liesl's gone, the work session, not the general meeting.
So were you suggesting we hold the work session the following week?
You mean Tuesday the 13th?
Tuesday the 13th. Do the work session, and then Tuesday the 20th, do the meeting. That way it's one after the, it's consecutive. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot going on, so that'll give us time to get those documents and everything in place.
And the purpose for having it on Tuesday the 13th rather than Monday the 12th is?
President's Day is Monday the
12th.
That was the 20th.
That's the 19th. The 12th is not a holiday.
Oh, right. Okay. So we could do it on the 12th.
Monday the 12th.
Yeah.
And if the meeting is on, the general meeting is on the 20th, we could move the deadline for packet submissions to Thursday from Wednesday. Mm-hmm. We'd still have enough days in advance of the meeting to publish the packet.
And when would that be, Dave?
That's fine. I'll be sending probably the packet information to Ben, so that's perfect, and maybe he can post it for me. Sure. So we are moving the work session to Monday, February 12th, and we are moving the general meeting to Tuesday, February 20th. Is that correct? Wonderful. I will post that information.
Okay. Any other business? I think we are adjourned. Thank you, folks.
No.
For being here.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye.
Thanks. Look forward to seeing you back.
Yeah, eventually.